Welcome to Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the movie Mission Impossible 1 minute at a time. I'm Chris.
I'm Jonathan.
I am Flonk.
I am Flonk.
Well, Flonk's back with us today.
Hey, Flonk!
It's Candy Rob from the Tombstone Minute, for those of you that remember that show.
Since canceled. It's been canceled.
Rob not only ruins other people's podcasts, he ruins at least two of his own. So, you know. I kid, Rob. You're a gem. You're a gem. I wouldn't have it any other way. The first time we met, I was like, Rob's my kind of
flonk. A-hole.
Yeah, my kind of flonk.
My kind of flonk.
This minute is minute 38, and it starts with Ethan shaking his head wearily and ends with him finally pointing a gun at Claire? Question mark? Mm. Guys, I think Claire's coming back.
Aww.
Yeah, she's our, of all the characters in this movie, the rich
back.
Tapestry of this movie, who's the one character you're like, you know who I need more of, who just like adds such a weight to the scenes that she's in? Claire. At the beginning of this minute, Ethan is still sitting wearily after he sent these emails out to the Book of Job, out into the universe, and he's waiting on a reply. As he sits there, he starts to doze off a little bit, and then we hear the crunching of the light bulbs out in the hallway that he had laid out as an early warning detection device. The door opens, and at a Dutch angle, in walks Jim Phelps. He's bloody, he's wet, and he's kind of pissed at Ethan. He's definitely, he's talking to Ethan and saying, you weren't there for me when I needed you. Where were you, Ethan?
Do you think that Ethan put read receipts on those emails? He's the kind of guy that uses read receipts, right?
Can you please mark that as this is when it got derailed? This is when this minute got derailed at, what are we, what even
at 3.5, almost 4 minutes.
I personally am okay with read receipts on iMessages, which is, in case someone listens to this in the future, those are text messages from Apple phones. But I hate read receipts in emails.
Oh, in emails, I find it's intrusive. I don't want anyone to know that I've read your email.
No. It also asks you in emails, right? It's like, do you want to send a read receipt? No, I do not want to send a read receipt.
I like to let people guess.
Yeah.
As to how I run my day.
Yep.
Yep. Also, at my job, I don't even have a phone on my desk. So I check my email once every 3 days. Might have two emails. We're very Slack-based.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering what it was like being homeless. But, okay, I get it.
Look, I sit in my garbage can.
It's a hand reaching into a garbage can. Means unsubscribe.
My job is to put documents into garbage cans. I unsubscribe people from the internet. When you push unsubscribe, that's my job.
Is Jim... Jim's probably just mad that Ethan was on his computer.
He's definitely mad. Yeah. Bro, what are you doing on my computer? How'd you know my password? It's Jim Flonk 1996. That's his password.
He's one of those guys. I love those people who like set up an email account and they decide to put the year they set up the email account inside the address. That is a litmus test if you're a moron. If the year you set up the email address is in your email address, you are a dumb MAGA person.
I see a lot of email addresses that are the person's name and the year of birth.
That's okay. That doesn't change.
That bugs me.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, now I know how old you are. Great. Thanks.
April, October.
Maybe it's the,
terrible.
You grew up Catholic, Chris. Maybe that's the date of their confirmation. You don't know.
Oh, yeah. It could be. You're right. The day they died, basically.
Maybe it was
the
date they ate the Eucharist. Is that what you do? Do you eat it?
We love to dine on the blood of the body of Christ and also his blood. To be fair, when you're a little kid, you can only eat Jesus. It's not till you get older that you're allowed to drink him as well.
That is true.
Well, while we're talking about hallucinations, let's continue talking about Ethan's hallucination. It's the same thing, right?
Basically, yeah. As Jim reaches out with his blood-soaked hand.
He grabs for Ethan, and as he grabs for him, we get a point of the camera switches, and we see a woman's hand grab Ethan and say, Ethan.
No, she said, Ethan.
Ethan.
Emmanuel Barret says, Ethan.
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 It's like she's breathing to talk, but she can't really do either. And like she's going to fall over. She's like pushing it out. Like,
well, she's been running too. Remember, if she's alive, she's been running on the lamb. The problem I have with this scene is that if you're going to set up Ethan having hallucination and Jim being in it, by having her also be in it, I assume as a moviegoer, she's also a hallucination. And this is a double wake up. You know, you wake up the first time and then something horrible happens and then you wake up for the real time. That's what I as a movie watcher think is happening right now.
I was under the impression, quite frankly, that there was something wrong in the clip you shared with me, because it doesn't make any sense to me that you would be dreaming of John Voight touching you and then suddenly realize it wasn't John Voight, but instead was Emmanuel Barret and freaking out. Normally,
and then get mad about it, too.
Right? Normally it would be the other way around.
No, I wanted it to be John Voight touching me, damn it.
Right. If I was, you know, it's late, I'm on my computer, we don't need to talk about what happened, and you're sort of dozing off, and you're imagining Emmanuel Barret, and all of a sudden, you know, you wake up, and it's John Voight with a bloody hand touching your shoulder.
A wet bloody hand.
Right? That's an appropriate response.
A freak
I don't even
out,
have
yeah.
a gun, but I would form one out of fear. I would craft one out of the anger of John Voight showing up in my basement.
Activate fear gun.
Whatever I could do. I don't want anything to do with John Voight late at night with a bloody
hand. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah.
If you look on the internet, fun fact, John Voight has the softest hands in Hollywood.
Oh, I did not know that.
I don't know that either. It's just a...
That's just a myth?
It's a myth I just started.
It's a myth? Dude, people have been talking about that for a long time.
Yeah.
I've read that.
Yes, yeah. Just ask Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
Your yes-anding is superb, Rob. Thank you. Thanks
Emmanuel
for playing with
Barret
me.
Emmanuel Barret kind of has similar features to Angelina Jolie. Have you guys
I thought you were about to say to John Voight.
No. No.
He looks like a doorknob wearing glasses.
That's what we've asked before. Why is she with John Voight? What is her deal? She's obviously younger than him.
She has cataracts. Horrible cataracts. She has alt-Bible blindness.
Every minute, I ask the experts.
The experts?
Is this you guys, you're my Carl Hungus. Jim Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
What is his job?
He is the leader of the Impossible Mission Force inside of the CIA.
Okay, so what is Kittredge's job?
He is the director of
the Impossible Mission Force.
Okay.
And probably has some other things going on with other covert operations in the CIA.
So if we had an org chart of IMF printed out, does Kittredge only have one direct report, and that's Jim Phelps, or are there other Jim Phelps?
There are other Jim Phelps, I think.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
we can argue this.
Then where's the B team from? Who's handling the B team? Because it's not Jim Phelps.
No, it is not Jim Phelps, but that's because his entire team is on lockdown, and Kittredge has gone rogue. I guarantee you all of B team was probably trained by Jim or someone else on the A team.
I don't believe that, because then there would only be like five names in the knock list.
How many people do you think are in the IMF at this point in this movie, not knowing anything about the movies to come?
At least like 50 people.
You think there's 50 agents?
Yeah.
Or 50 people?
No,
total?
50 agents at least.
Wow.
And I think there's got
to
be.
You'd have to have 150 to 200 supporting people, specialists. Yep.
So does Kittredge annually have a little retreat where his direct reports, including Jim Phelps, hang out in like Martha's Vineyard and talk about strategy for the IMF? Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. They do trust exercises and stuff. Yeah. They walk through hot coals together, prove their worth.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So there's other Jim Phelps. Jim Phelps isn't so.
I'm going to have to be sold on this thing.
Because I believe there are other IMF teams all over the world.
I do too, but I believe that Jim is the one who spearheaded them.
I don't believe.
What the hell does Kittredge do then? Kittredge
I think the conceit of the book explains it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
What happens is the IMF used to be not under the jurisdiction of the CIA. It has been added in the past, let's say, 10 years. The book's not specific. Kittredge has taken over something that used to be just Jim's show. Because the TV show, the IMF was those six people. Those five people on the IMF in the TV show, that's it. Other than the person on telling them who was getting the job, there was no other IMF that we ever saw. It was never even implied that there were other agents out in the universe that were IMF. There were other agents. There definitely were CIA contacts and other things. But this movie, I think, is it moving along through the decades. And what's happened is now there's oversight on the IMF.
So has Kittredge always been the boss of Phelps? Or when the CIA came in, did they say, like, we need to put a buffer in between the CIA and IMF? We're going to bring in this Kittredge guy. His LinkedIn was pretty good.
Yeah, I think that he came in because he was probably already doing ops on some level.
Okay.
But see, the thing is, it would seem to me like there would be, if there's not that many people in the team, or ages that is, it would be a lot easier to do a mole hunt than they're making it out to be.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think it's just like they're the A team and the B team and that's it. I mean, I definitely think there's more than 10, but 50 seems like a lot. But you got to remember also, we learn later, there's a lot of disavowed agents. So I think that they burn through these guys pretty quickly.
Yeah,
because they're getting burned in the field. I'm sure they're burned. They're disavowed not because they did anything bad, but because they just messed up the job. The whole point of the beginning of the movie is you will do this job, and if you don't do it successfully, you will be disavowed by the secretary.
That's the point. Yeah, no, I get that. I'm just wondering, you know, like what if Jim is the team lead on this one, and he gets to pick the crew that he likes to pick, who's picking the crews for the other ones?
Someone they found on Monster.com.
Monster.com, sponsor of Minute Impossible. Go Monster. Is that their tagline? Is it Go Monster?
Okay, I have a question.
I'm not.
We're halfway through my week. We're over halfway through my week.
Thank God.
Yeah. I'm sorry for all the unsubscribes. And I don't get any masks. There's no masks.
You said, I want these minutes. These are the minutes I want to go over.
This is the closest we get to a mask. We still have this fake out. We think it's one character and it's another, but it's not a mask. So since we started, I did a little more research into Scientology. And I'm curious if you think there are any parallels between what the masks represent in Mission Impossible and some of the beliefs in Scientology.
Nope. I think there's absolutely no connection whatsoever.
All right. Well, let me bring
let's
this
move
little,
on.
Let's bring this little fact. You hold on, guys. Listen, I'm a guest.
So Claire shows up again.
And Scientology believes that 75 million years ago,
again, his beliefs are not those of Minute Impossible.
It's fine.
Who?
Not mine either.
Tom Cruise's? No.
Or mine.
Neither Tom Cruise nor Rob's beliefs are my beliefs.
Scientology believes that 75 million years ago, a galactic emperor named Xenu sent millions of frozen souls on spaceships from his overpopulated kingdom to the bases of volcanoes on Earth. The volcanoes were hydrogen bombed, obviously. And today, the scattered and reincarnated spiritual beings, or thetans, pick up human bodies as quote-unquote containers to inhabit. Their excess emotional baggage can haunt the human host, however, so it needs to be cleared out. What I'm asking to you, my dear Mission Impossible host, are the masks an analogy to the containers that the thetans inside of Scientology inhabit?
This movie works on many levels, Rob.
And, I don't think that's one of the levels.
If Rob decides that's a level, then that's... no, Rob, no.
I just want to bring out other ideas, and and we can discuss or disavow them, if you will. But, you know, everyone knows that Tom Cruise learned about Scientology on Usernet, and the masks are thetans. That's all I'm saying, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Rob. I am so mad that this is what you spent your time writing notes about. It's just, It's an affront to me. It's an affront to this podcast.
It's an affront to Xenu.
Lord Xenu, please, please hear my call. Rob is lousy with Thetans. Lousy
Xenu,
with them.
Xenu, warrior prince of Scientology.
Oh my God.
That's all I have for this minute for notes.
Yeah, really? Thanks, Rob. Why don't you just sit over there and we're actually going to talk about the rest of this stupid minute.
Okay.
Back on track. I understand from a story point of view why they're trying to introduce Claire back into this movie. They're trying to introduce her back in because, one, Ethan's by himself and he has to have a team with him. The whole point of Mission Impossible was not a one-man fighting by himself. It's a team. So Claire coming back is shocking. It also ties us back to Jim. The only problem is with this is that I think that Emmanuel Barré, the choices she's making in this movie are not strong as a lead female character. Is she really a lead female character? I don't know.
She's also the weakest member of the Force, too.
She's not written that way, and I think that's the writing's fault. I don't think it's the actress's fault.
No.
But the problem is she's also not playing, because later on when we meet Max, Max is played by an actress who has a very strong voice in this movie. And Claire, is Emmanuel Barré's character, Claire, seems to be a choice that she's making to be this very quiet, mousy victim.
It's not her choice, though. She's not making a choice, as we find out later. She's part of something Phelps is orchestrating.
Because at the end of the movie, it's not like Claire becomes brash and changes into another person. She's still quiet on the left side of someone behind them. She's very submissive in this movie.
Yeah, I believe if another actress had played the part, it wouldn't have been the same at all. It would have been a much different interpretation of the character than what we're getting. Yeah, I mean, I really do.
I don't want to bash her for doing this. I just don't know if I like what she's coming to the table with.
No, exactly. And I remember that the reviews and a lot of people that at the time were very upset about the portrayal and the character as a whole, that it was the weakest link in the film. And I mean, you know, looking at it 20 years later, you can still say, yeah, I kind of agree.
I mean, I read that Emmanuel Barré walked into the outdoor for the audition.
Oh God!
You just think everybody's dumb. You're just so smart, aren't you, Rob? Just yesterday, you misunderstood what a printer is and thought it was a answering machine.
I don't want to bring this up again.
Oh, it matters closed with you.
Brian De Palma saw her. I mean, when he saw her, he saw her, and. And if it wasn't warm, she wouldn't wear much more, which we see that throughout the movie.
Claire is not written very strongly. We've talked about it before. This scene, this is the beginning of him being extremely violent toward her. It's disconcerting.
Yeah.
This is someone who should be happy that he's not the only person left of his team. And they're close. I mean, we know that she knew him before she was married to Jim. And the fact that he is suspicious of her makes sense, but he's also aggressively pointing a gun at her, throwing her across the room. I mean, it's over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this. One of the things that Tom Cruise can do better than most any actor ever is hold a handgun. An expert handgun holder in movies.
And this is the first and only time that he holds a gun in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, is that true?
Yep.
You know what movie is similar to that around the same time where you have like a hero in an action film that doesn't use firearms?
Titanic?
No. another movie I love, though. Speed. The Keanu Reeves character does not like fire a gun, I don't think, a single time.
At the beginning, he shoots his partner.
In the leg, but like, yeah.
Well, he still shoots him. And then later on, when he gets off the bus, he does put on tactical gear and carry a gun.
And then he's also aiming it at Dennis Hopper and Sandra Bullock, and the only reason he doesn't fire it is because Sandra Bullock is in the way.
Yeah, but I mean, just saying in general, both Ethan Hunt and, God, what is Keanu
Jack Travin.
Jack Travin, thank you, are kind of like interesting characters that come around in the action film genre at this era, right? I mean, like, we're coming off like Stallone, Schwarzenegger. I mean, we're not even that far away from Charles Bronson in Death Wish. And
Charles Bronson.
We're kind of coming from a certain trope of what an action star is. And with both Tom Cruise and Keanu Reeves, we're sort of seeing a different type.
Yeah, well, in the this goes back also to the TV show. They never used guns as a last resort in the TV show. It was always about their brains and always about being a spy. Because it was trying to be different than James Bond.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's where the second movie gets that you know, really kind of like got really angry response to it, because it's all about guns
and motorbikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they take it to a level in two. They go back to their roots in 3, 4, and 5. He definitely holds weapons, but he's really never shooting anybody. No. I mean, in 5 or 4, he's ninjing the gun out of someone's hand and like ripping it apart, you know,
yeah.
That kind of stuff. So he does hold a gun well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He does.
At second 57, he's holding it right in Claire's face.
Does Jim Phelps always dress like a flasher?
Well, he and his wife both dress like, she's dressed like a witch.
They're both dressed like flashers. These are flasher outfits they're wearing.
She's dressed like a magician's assistant who's about to reveal her costume.
That's true.
But yeah, Jim Phelps dresses like a perv.
Yeah.
The old man glasses don't help.
No. The fact that he's John Voight doesn't help either.
No.
And then he's going to be rubbing on Rob.
What? I don't want John Voight ever visiting me.
He'll be in your dreams tonight.
I to this day, I always crush a light bulb up at night and put it out in front of my door so that John Voight won't come and touch me in the middle of the night.
That's the Christmas thing to do, you know? It's like Krampus.
It's like garlic to him. He cannot stand light bulbs. It's the mercury, I think. I think he's allergic to mercury. I don't know.
I think that's why he wears that white scarf every time he's, you know, at an awards show, in case anybody's done that.
Yeah, he used to be a jaunty fellow, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
He was a handsome dude.
Yeah, he was a good-looking guy.
And he was rugged. I think handsome might be... He was rugged, because he's not...
But now he's like, what if Christopher Walken was uglier?
That's an insult to Christopher Walken.
Well,
Christopher Walken still got that panache. But,
yeah.
I'd let Christopher Walken touch me. I've said it here first. Dibs. I got dibs on Christopher Walken.
Oh, man. Take mental note that's where the went off the tracks and into the ditch.
Into the wood pile.
Woodyard. Woodyard, guys.
They went straight through the woodyard into the wood pile. It's like the train in The Fugitive, literally chasing Harrison Ford now.
Hey, guys, it's me, Adolescent Rob, and I'm on the internet. Do you guys have any pictures of, I don't know, John Voight or Christopher Walken?
I hope the thetan inside your container can get clear.
Is anybody else on here with me?
Is it time for Tech of the Ep yet?
No. Young Rob's going to talk forever.
No, I'm done. I told you guys.
He was done after that.
That's Young Rob. Old Rob. Old Nasty Rob. Yeah, this is a great time to talk about Tech of the Ep. I'm going to go first this time. Tech of the Ep. Well, luckily, thank goodness, at second 56, we actually see the rest of the room. So I can kind of peruse around. My Tech of the Ep is the really really nice telephoto lens on the camera over to the right. It's on a tripod. It's some basic spyware. Yeah, I'm going with that.
It's a good one.
Everything else is we've talked about.
Well, I hate to tell you, Jonathan, that is not a camera with a telescoping lens.
Is it an answering machine?
That is a telescope. And everyone knows that Jim Phelps loves to surf on alt Bible astrology. I'm sorry,
astronomy.
Bible astronomy.
Astrology.
Which we didn't see Ethan scroll that far. But yeah, Phelps loves the stars.
He's a stargazer?
Yeah. And that's his telescope he uses.
Is the rest of Tech of the Ep just us correcting each other on what we've just picked as Tech of the Ep?
Well, what I was going to pick, I'll be honest, what I was going to pick when Phelps first comes in, I thought above him on the shelf was an urn. And I was like, oh my God, who died in the safe house that they put him in an urn? But it eventually zooms out enough that you see it's a flower pot.
Yeah, it's the flower pot the gun was in.
Common mistake. Urns and flower pots.
That's also not tech. That is a piece of pottery. So I'm going to have to ask you to choose again. Sorry, man.
You went first on the minute where there's no tech.
You can pick the same thing.
I chose the telescope then.
It's not a telescope. It's a camera.
Listen, I played Myst. That's a telescope.
God, Myst. Probably paid it on a MacBook just like that.
Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
I'm going through the minute, and I'm going to go with the printer that he thinks is an answering machine.
I'm so mad.
I can't see it right now. Do we actually see it in this?
Yes. If you go frame by frame, when he flips Claire over his shoulder, basically, it's right there next to her, and it's like really well lit, and you can see two slots in it, like where paper goes.
Two slots where the messages go.
Messages.
The messages go in, and there's a slot where the messages come out, because that's how answering machines work.
Unless it's a fax machine.
Oh, now it could be a fax machine. I'm going to give you that a printer can also be a fax machine.
Yes,
I will not give you that a answering machine can be anything but.
But it looks like a printer or a fax machine now that I see it.
Well, there's also some cool stuff right behind the pins in second 55. You can see there's like a little looks like a keypad.
Yeah.
This was all stuff left over from Jack. Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Was this the end of Emilio Estevez's career when he died in Mission Impossible?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Besides the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, but it was also the same year. He was in Mighty Ducks, and he's only been in self-produced movies since.
Outside of the Mighty Ducks sequels.
Correct. Which is sad.
Yeah.
Because I always liked him.
I did too.
Rob, what horrifying research do you have on Emilio Estevez's religion that we can talk about right now?
I have none. I didn't know.
Oh,
I had no,
okay.
No, I wasn't prepared.
You weren't prepared. Well, you know what? Maybe next time you'll do your homework, okay?
Oh, I will for next minute. Don't you worry one bit.
Okay. Well, as usual, Rob, it has been a pleasure to have you on.
I'm excited.
Unfortunately, we have two more episodes that we have to have you on for. If you are willing to join us, we will take this ride with you.
I'm ready to do it.
All right.
I accept.
Fantastic. Well, we will all take that ride together tomorrow when we talk about Minute 39. You can talk to us directly on Twitter at Min Impossible, M-I-N Impossible, and our Facebook group at Impossible Minute Force. Until tomorrow, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
I'm Rob.
This minute will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Didn't it already self-destruct?
Oh, there it goes. Bang.